Love this podcast? Support this show through the Acast supporter feature. It's up to you how much you give, and there's no regular commitment. Just click the link in the show description to support now.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f***? So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Fiction, science fiction, horror, fantasy, crime, LGBT, thriller.
You have now entered the House of Mystery with your hosts, Eric Shapiro, David North Martino, John Copenhaver, and Al Warren.
Heard on KCB 106.5 FM Los Angeles,
102.3 FM Riverside,
and 105.0 AM Palm Springs.
Got an author and so much more, actually. And so what we'll do is we'll just have them jump right in. Welcome, Charlie Serafin. I'm glad to meet you.
Nice to meet you, Al. Thanks for the opportunity to meet your guests, and no, I'm not a killer.
Well, that's just what I said. You know, it's something just a little bit different for us, but that's this. I say that nicely. So now, Charlie, you have written a book, and it's called One Stupid Mistake, Smart Decisions Making in a crazy world. Yeah, smart decision making
Little mistake. We don't count that one as a
no.
Major.
Well, I that's my producer wrote this out. What is this? It's shorthand, I guess. So, okay. Tell me about Charlie. So, where did this come from? The book, and why you?
No idea, and no idea.
Perfect.
I can't tell you. I think the truth of the matter is stranger than fiction, so I think it fits right into the mystery of your program. I've always written. I've always written little things, but I did not set out to write a book. There was at no point that I think, oh, I think I'll write a book. But I started writing these essays, I guess you'd call them, short little stories that had nothing to do with one another. And sometimes in the middle of the night, I would wake up and I would go, oh, yeah. And I would have this kind of unusual, strange thought. So I'd go to the computer 2 o'clock, 3 o'clock in the morning. And sometimes it would be a word or two. Sometimes it'd be a sentence, sometimes a paragraph, sometimes a page. And I would write it out, and go, okay, you can go back to bed now. And I went back to bed. And I did this for a relatively long period of time. And in the midst of doing that, I don't know if you looked at my bio, but in another life, I'm still in this body on the planet,
yeah.
I was involved in the radio business. So I'm very comfortable being on the radio. I've been on the radio probably tens of thousands of times. And I used to do a lot of interview programs, and I've done a lot of man-on-the-street interviews, just walk up to people at random and ask them a question. And I always loved doing that, because people are very entertaining, especially when they don't have a lot of time to think about it or worry about it. So I, in addition to writing these little things, whatever you want to call them, essays I call them, I started asking people, hey, excuse me, I'm working on a project. Would you mind sharing a mistake that you've made with me? And the reactions, Al, were just mind-boggling. It was really, it was nothing like what I expected. People started turning every shade of blue. They got really uncomfortable. And, you think I was asking them, hey, do you mind if I see what brand of underwear you're wearing?
Yeah. Or something really.
But you'd think a mistake would be an easy thing. Oh, yeah. But, and here are some responses. A lot of people said, oh, gosh, that's really hard. I've made a lot of mistakes, but I can't think of any right now. Or some people would say, oh, yeah, good question. Yeah, I was just thinking about that. Can I get back to you? And, of course, I knew they would never get back to me. Half of them didn't know who I was. So, and then I would get a response like, oh, well, one time I forgot to get the bacon on my wife's cheeseburger, and I know she likes bacon on her cheeseburger. So it was kind of a put-off answer to what I thought was a reasonable question. And then maybe 1% or a half of 1% of the people, and I talked to hundreds of people because I was having fun with this now, the more uncomfortable they were with their reactions, the more fun it was. So I started asking people to share a mistake, and a really small percentage said something incredibly personal and thought-provoking and serious. I had a woman tell me, and this was a stranger that I had never met before. She said, she looked at me and she said, I got pregnant when I was 19. I had a relationship with somebody I had no business having a relationship with. I didn't like him, he didn't like me, but we had sex and I got pregnant. And I was like, whoa, okay, that's pretty significant. And then she looked at me and she said, but I want to tell you that that was 10 years ago, and right now I have the most beautiful 10-year-old son. I've since met the man of my dreams. We got married. We have a wonderful relationship and a great family, and I kind of owe it all to that one stupid mistake. So I had the whole gamut there of people from that didn't want to admit any kind of mistake to someone who admitted a really personal mistake. And that prompted me to ask a second question. And the second question was, do you have a little voice inside you that tells you when you're about to do something you know you shouldn't do? And again, I had no idea what the response would be, but the response blew me away because every single person, rich, poor, young, old, every socio-demographic, just everybody, atheists, agnostics, overtly and devoutly religious people, every single person said exactly the same thing. They said yes. Some said, I don't call it that, but yeah, I know what you're talking about. I have that voice. So I started putting the two together, and I thought, everybody makes mistakes. You make mistakes, Al. I make mistakes. We all make mistakes. And every single one of us has some kind of an internal mechanism that tells us when we're about to do something that we know we shouldn't do, and yet we do it anyway. So then I went back to my essays, and I realized I was writing all these little stories about people making decisions. So it all came together after I wrote the 21st essay, and that was a story about a friend of mine who died a horrific death from cancer. And I put together this fun little book of 21 very short chapters. Each one has a meditation. We can talk about that later. I'm kind of rambling now, but and everyone has a thought for the day, and it's for people who make decisions, which means it's for everybody, and it gives you a chance to do a little bit of reflection on a topic that we don't spend nearly enough time thinking about, and that is our stupid mistakes.
Well, why do you think that's important? And why do you think that is something that we don't spend any time on?
Well, as I said, I was involved in the media for a long time, and I would say and challenge any of our listeners today to look at the day's top headlines any day, any time, and out of the top five, I bet you can find two at least, maybe more, some days five out of five, that are associated with a human being making an incredibly stupid mistake. Because it's just happening, and it seems to be accelerating. It seems that people behaving badly and doing dumb things is almost the new norm. And then we have, and I don't really want to get political, and I think I'm relatively apolitical, so I'm not leaning left or right on this thing, but we have leaders who, number one, will not admit that they've made mistakes. I'm waiting for that, you know, that leader to come out and go, you know what, folks, I really screwed up.
Yeah.
It was all my fault. I made a bad judgment. I misread the situation. I said or did something I know I shouldn't have done, and I'm really sorry, and I hope you forgive me, and I promise I'll try to do better next time. But instead, what we have is we have a culture where the leaders of both the left and the right get on television and on the radio and in the newspapers, magazine articles, every single day, pointing their finger at somebody else and saying it's all their fault. They screwed up. It wasn't me. I didn't do anything wrong.
Yeah.
I don't make mistakes.
Right.
I'm a leader. You know, they made all the mistakes, and it's all their fault. And that's frustrating because that's just not how it works.
Well,
and if we don't start admitting our mistakes and spending a little time with them, as I said, and reflecting on them, and finding ways to commit fewer mistakes, we're not going to be in very good shape.
Well, I didn't make any mistakes. It's that fake news media that's telling you that I made a mistake.
Exactly. You know, and it's the other side, too. It's like, you know, I can't find anything good that this regime has done.
Yeah.
You know, this administration hasn't done anything good. Everything they've done is bad. Well, come on.
Yeah.
You know, it's just not like that. That's not realistic. I just think we're missing an opportunity. And so I think, look, I don't expect that we're going to get to those people and they're going to change their behaviors. And starting tomorrow, we're going to have all of our leaders stand up, raise their hand, and admit their mistakes. I don't believe that'll happen. But what I do believe can happen is that you and I, Al, and every person who's listening now can take a little quiet time, get in touch with what I call your quiet little voice that helps guide you and tell you right and wrong. And I'm not going to sit here and tell you. It's not like I say, okay, you should do this or do that or think this or think that or say this or say that like I do because I'm right. No, I'm not right. I only know what's right for me. You know what's right for you. But if every person did only what they knew was right or they thought was right, we would be light years ahead of where we are today.
Well, how do I separate the voices that are telling me to go out and blow up things?
Exactly. That's a good question. And, you know, those voices, by the time you get to that point where they tell you to go out and mail a bunch of bombs or go into a synagogue and shoot a bunch of innocent people, by that point, the damage has already been done. You are so far out of touch with your quiet little voice that whatever that is that you're hearing, that's coming from a deep, dark place.
Right.
And what I believe the source of that is, and this is a theory, I don't think anybody, you can't disprove it, but I can't prove it. But I believe, and my premise for the book is, that the source of a lot of that, what I call noise, is just that. It's our world. It's a combination of traditional media and social media and airplanes flying overhead and mechanical sounds and the TV blaring in the background and going for a walk in nature with earbuds and listening to your favorite music turned up to a loud volume. And you have so much external, or your wife or your husband or your mother-in-law or your sister-in-law or your child or your parent or whoever, there's so much stuff that we're being bombarded with on a daily basis, on a minute-by-minute basis, it's really hard to find that quiet space. And I like to remind people, there's a reason that peace and quiet as words go together. And why do we say peace and quiet? Well, they're in inverse order. The peace comes after you find the quiet. And if you don't take a little bit of time every day for quiet, where you're not being bombarded by external sound waves and visual images, then you're less likely to be able to get in touch with your quiet little voice. It's sort of, the media term is recalibrates, right? So we recalibrate ourselves and get back into sync. And then we can go about our business, and we know right from wrong, and we generally will do the right thing. But when you get all crazy because you have all this other external garbage that's blasting at you, you know, second after second, it's really hard to hear your quiet little voice.
Yeah. I just have to wonder where it gets lost when you know, because we choose our life. We get up and we go to work and wife, kids, car, or single downtown in a suite. And however we do it, we're going about our day, and we have our voices telling us different things, and our mistakes. How do we get lost from that, or lost in these voices, to the fact where we're not really in touch with what's around us?
I think it's kind of like waves at the beach. You know, I think it just happens over time. It slowly and gradually erodes. And the example that I use in my personal life, and again, I don't know if this is exactly what happened to you or to any other person who might be listening, but I remember I really worked, and writing these essays in the middle of the night kind of helped, but I really remember as a kid being more in touch with that quiet little voice. I tried to think of a specific instance that I could remember where I heard the little voice, but I did the wrong thing anyway. And the first one for me is when I was 6 years old. I was playing on a swing set, climbed up to the top and watching, and there was a bar, they used to call it a glider, and it had these two metal tubes that were sticking up, and when it went one direction, the tube would open, and it went the other direction, that tube would close, and another one would open on the other side. And I was watching it for a while, and I thought, I wonder if I put my finger in that hole in that tube, if I can pull it out before it goes back, you know, the other direction. And the little voice said, don't do that. That's a really bad idea. Don't do that. And I thought, yeah, let me try it. And I put my finger in there, and sure enough, the tube came back, and it crushed my finger, almost cut off the tip of my finger, and I still have a little scar on my right index finger that I, whenever I want to really remember, I can just look at it. And when it gets real cold, it sometimes goes numb. But I thought, yeah, that was the first time I remember going against that little voice. And I can think of lots of other stupid mistakes in my life that I've made where I went against it. But I thought, okay, I heard it real loud back when I was a kid, but I don't remember it hearing it quite as loud in some of the other instances. And well, why is that? And I came to the realization that as a kid, at least as a kid when I was growing up, life was simpler and we didn't have as many external distractions as we have now. But the more sophisticated we get, the more mechanized we get, the more we live really inside our media, the less time we have for that quiet reflection. So the exercises every chapter, most of them involve going outside, taking 5 minutes, closing your eyes, and just listening. And there are different things that you can listen for to sort of hone it. And one person said, well, why do you do that? Or, I mean, why do you suggest that people should do a listening exercise? And I said, because if you talk to people who regularly meditate, serious meditation, they're pretty balanced and pretty healthy, and they don't make a lot of stupid mistakes. they're in really good, you know, physical, mental, spiritual health. And yet, I know from my conversations that most of us can't meditate. We don't know how to do that. It's too hard. They say, you know, concentrate on your breathing and empty your mind. And my wife especially goes, I can't empty my mind. I have too many thoughts. I'm thinking about something every minute, you know, and the thoughts just keep bombarding one another and pushing one another out. But everybody knows how to listen. So listening is the simplest form of meditation, and it accomplishes the same thing. It's that recalibration of your brain to get to that calm space, so that when you do have to make a decision, you're more likely to do this decision that's in sync with who you are and what you should be deciding, as opposed to, hey, I think I'll make up 15 bombs and send them out to people I don't like in the mail.
Yeah, but okay, so when you were talking earlier, you're asking people about what mistakes they made, and they would tell you, and there's all types of mistakes. And did you know about it? Did you know you were going to be making a mistake or doing something wrong or whatever? And so if we are aware of a thought about doing something that in essence is going to be a mistake, and we choose to do it, why is that?
It's called cognitive dissonance, a fancy term that the psychologists use, which is basically a disconnection between what we know and what we choose to believe. And there are a lot of different reasons for it, and I'm not a psychologist, and I'm not an MD, I've looked at some books that are so much more scholarly on the subject than mine is. Mine is not a scholarly book. Mine is a book for everybody. And I think if you can read at about a fifth grade level, you can read it. It's a real easy read, and it doesn't have complex compound issues in it. It's just simple. But cognitive dissonance comes into play a lot because we just want to make an excuse for thinking or doing something that we know isn't right or true. And, you know, and the phrase is, well, I have a really hard time believing that. You know, sometimes you confront someone with the truth and you tell them, no, you know, the moon isn't made out of green cheese. And they look at you and they say, well, I have a really hard time believing that. Well, they don't really have a hard time believing it. It's just that they don't want to believe it. They don't want to do. You say, you know, the example would be, if, and this happened to me once, you find a big wad of money laying on the sidewalk, right? Mm-hmm. And you pick it up, and you look around, and there's nobody there. There's nobody looking at you. No one saw you. Now here you are. You have this wad of money wrapped in rubber bands, and you have to make a decision. Well, there's two decisions. You can put it in your pocket and keep walking away and go, lucky me, I just hit the jackpot. Or you can say, this probably belongs to someone, and it's probably really important to them, because this is a lot of money. And so do you do what instinctively, I think we all know what the right thing to do is. The right thing to do is to try to figure out who it belongs to and get it back to them, which if you dropped an envelope full of money that you were taking to make your mortgage payment or your rent or something, you know, you'd be devastated. So if someone returned it to you and said, hey, we found your money and here it is, you know, what a marvelous thing that is. So there's a right thing and a wrong thing. And so we have to make those kinds of decisions. Some of them are dramatic like that, and some of them are a lot less dramatic. The person at the store counts out your change, and you gave them a 10 and they give you change for a 20. Do you say anything? Or just put it in your pocket and walk away.
I take the money and bet on the horses.
and do you think you're going to win with that money? You think that'll be the winner?
No.
And if it is, then will you parlay that bet into something else bigger? I don't know.
Isn't that how it goes? You get caught by the devil.
Yeah.
But when you're talking about this sort of, in a way, isn't it also sabotaging ourselves?
No question. And it's almost as if we're, it's almost as if we're encouraged to sabotage ourselves because, again, if you consume the media and you look at the stories that are happening on the, you know, Access Hollywood and all those kinds of things, you know, the what the celebrities are doing, you go, holy tamale. Here are people who have fame and fortune. They have everything going their way, and they are doing the dumbest things. You know, something that you would never, you like, oh, my God, I can't. How could they be so stupid? And that was the question I kept asking over and over, and thus it became the title of the book, you know, One Stupid Mistake. I was like, how could they be so stupid?
Yeah.
And most of us can't even relate to the kinds of dumb things that they do. I got a thing the other day, and it said, you know, who are the top money-making dead celebrities? And I thought about it. I thought, what a crazy topic, right? I mean, okay, you know, they're dead, but they're making a lot of money. Well, Michael Jackson is right there. It's like, ooh, gosh. Elvis is right there. Ooh, golly. Marilyn Monroe is in the list. Oh, gosh. You know, tragic things related to stupid mistakes.
Right.
And then if you had a list of who are the top money making people who do stupid things, you know, we could write 50 books on that.
Oh yeah, yeah.
There's
yeah.
so many.
Well, then how do you deal with? Okay, so when you're talking about this, and there's things people want to believe, and then things that they know aren't true, but they want to believe.
Ryan Reynolds here from Mint Mobile. With the price of just about everything going up during inflation, we thought we'd bring our prices down. So to help us, we brought in a reverse auctioneer, which is apparently a thing.
Mint Mobile Unlimited Premium Wireless. How to get 30, 30, how to get 30, how to get 20, 20, 20, how to get 20, 20, how to get 15, 15, 15, 15, just $15 a month? Sold!
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hi, I'm Daniel, founder of Pretty Litter. Cats and cat owners deserve better than any old-fashioned litter. That's why I teamed up with scientists and veterinarians to create Pretty Litter. Its innovative crystal formula has superior odor control and weighs up to 80% less than clay litter. Pretty Litter even monitors health by changing colors to help detect early signs of potential illness. It's the world's smartest kitty litter.
Go to prettylitter.com and use code ACAST for 20% off your first order and a free cat toy. Terms and conditions apply. See site for details.
There's never been a faster or easier way to start your weight loss journey than with PlushCare. PlushCare accepts most insurance plans and gives you online access to board-certified physicians who can prescribe FDA-approved weight loss medications like Wegovy and Zepbound for those who qualify. Take charge of your health and speak with a board-certified physician about a weight loss plan that's right for you. Get started today at PlushCare.com/weightloss. That's PlushCare.com/weightloss. PlushCare.com/weightloss.
Them, and you know that you're talking about the moon and green cheese and stuff. How is it someone can believe the world is flat? And how are they rationalizing things in other areas?
I would say that anybody who believes that the world is flat should probably be avoided at all costs because they're probably not going to drive the right direction on the freeway. They're going to do a lot of other things that are just really not in sync. You know, they're kind of if you have anybody who's not quite that bad but leaning that direction, please buy them a copy of my book and make sure they read it, you know, to kind of get a grip here, folks. Let's get back to some kind of reality. But I don't know. I mean, that's a completely different subject, and I don't mean to make light of it.
Yeah.
There is a There's a tremendous amount of mental illness in our culture today. We know that. There's so many people that are just really wigged out. You know what I mean? They're just out there now, and I don't know enough about medical treatment and psychology and psychiatry to be able to help them and reach them. But I know that my focus is more on the regular normal people that are really good people, that, and we all make mistakes. There's not a single any. You find me someone who's never made a mistake, and I'm going to find you either a liar or a narcissist, because we all make mistakes. We do things that have consequences that we didn't intend. So, my focus is really more on just the average person who says, like, yeah, you know, and you know, if you're one of these people. Geez, I seem to be doing that more often. You know, I seem to be forgetting my keys, or my car in the parking lot. I don't remember where I left it, or you know, I burn the cookies when I'm making cookies, or I seem to be making more of those kinds of inattentive mistakes, and I believe that that's a direct result of this bombardment of noise and stuff that's going on, that we're not really using our own brains efficiently and effectively. And right or wrong, I believe the cure is to just get to that quiet place for a little bit every day. Just find a little bit of quiet time for reflection. And and if you have a hard time with that, you know, I can show you how to do it. It's relatively easy. Everybody can do it. If you've got even bad hearing, but if you've got a couple of ears, then spend some time listening, and that has a lot of other side benefits too, because if you're listening, then you pick up on so many things that are going on around you in your world, and you hear if you're really actively listening, you hear people more clearly, so you know what their intentions are and you know what it is that they're thinking about. I also point out that, you know, an active listener is the most welcomed person in any conversation.
Now, one thing I noticed now on your website there, you had a bit here about the lunch with Ronald Reagan. Maybe tell the listeners a little bit about that.
I've had a lot of adventures in my life, and many of them are unexplained, as we all do. If you think about it, if you think your life has been perfectly programmed and you're in charge, I think you're delusional, because stuff happens every day that you didn't anticipate, and you were always reacting to things. But I had the opportunity as a young reporter to know Ronald Reagan when he was running for governor and after he became governor here in California. And I interviewed him a number of times and asked him questions at press conferences and that sort of thing. One day when I was working in San Francisco, I got a telegram, and the telegram said, you are cordially invited, Nancy and I cordially invite you to join us for lunch at the White House on such and such a date. And that was back in the days of telegram, way before email, obviously. And I looked at it, and my first thought was, this is one of my friends playing a really elaborate hoax, and it's really funny. But there was an RSVP number on it, and I called the RSVP number, and the operator answered, you know, White House. So I went, oh, okay. And I said, yeah, I got your invitation here. I wanted to RSVP for this lunch that President Reagan wants me to come to. And says, just a moment, sir. And they put me through to the appointment secretary and put my name on the list. And I went to I flew to Washington, and we went into the government house in the small theater in the basement, and they brought out every single member of the cabinet. There were about 100 people in the room, first of all, and they brought out every member of the cabinet, and they allowed us to answer questions. We had no tape recorders allowed, no cameras allowed, but we could take notes and ask questions. So we had the Secretary of the Treasury and the Secretary of the Interior and the Secretary of State, and eventually, Vice President Bush came out. He was last. And then we walked through the tunnel and came up in the White House and went into a room and and sat down and had lunch. And I asked people, because I always do this, I told you that before, I asked questions a lot, and I said to the people next to me, who are you and where are you from? Well, somebody was from Des Moines, Iowa, and somebody was from upstate New York, and somebody was from Georgia, and they all worked at either a radio or a television station or a newspaper, and they got the invitation just like I did, out of the blue. And we had a wonderful lunch and went back afterwards. And I thought, wow, what a wonderful, weird surprise. You know, we had a chance President Reagan talked to us a little bit, and we asked him some questions, and then we had photo op with him, so I got a picture of me with the president at the White House. And a number of years later, when I was in Dallas, I met a guy, and he said something, and he said, oh, I worked in the Reagan White House. I said, really? Oh, yeah. I said, I had lunch at the White House. He said, oh, you were part of my program. And I said, your program? What do you mean? He said, well, we did that every month. Every month for 8 years, President Reagan invited 100 people from local and regional media, nobody from the New York or the Washington, press corps, but just small media people from all over the country to the White House to meet the cabinet and to meet with him and to be able to ask questions. And I always marveled, if you think about it, how right-wing and conservative President Reagan was during his time, and yet his popularity numbers were always extremely high. And they'd called him the great communicator and all that. But if you think about it, he had a very effective strategy for touching people at a grassroots level. So if somebody, a newspaper publisher or a television reporter from Ames, Iowa, and someone like that is going into the White House every single month for 8 years and then going back to their home state, it was a really brilliant a PR maneuver, which, again, I had the experience before I understood the experience. It wasn't a stupid mistake. It was
no. So what are you hoping people get out of your book? What's the thing, the one thing, if they can get something out of reading your book, what would that be that would make you happy?
I'd like them to think and to use their brains. They can challenge, not really, because I'm not pontificating in the book, and I'm not saying you ought to do this and you ought to do that or think this, think that. So I think they'll enjoy the stories. They're cute little stories about people. I usually use just the first names and things that they did. One of the reviewers that I got, and I know I'm rambling off here, but I have to tell you the name of the review. The review said, Coyote Eats Cat and Mother Teresa. Now, I tell a story about a coyote and a cat, and I tell a story about Mother Teresa, but they're not really related, but this reviewer put them together. So I guess that's the bottom line. I'd like you to enjoy it, I'm almost positive that it will make you think. You'll absolutely reconsider the way you approach your daily decisions. We make thousands of decisions every day. Some of them are conscious, some of them are unconscious. But I think it will help raise consciousness and make you more aware of your decisions, and that would be my dream come true.
Wow, pretty interesting. Where did you come up with deciding to write this? Like, what drew you into actually making a book out of it?
Okay, the truth is stranger than fiction sometimes. It was the last chapter. It's chapter 21 in the book. And it wasn't until I finished writing that essay, I didn't even know how many essays I had, because I would just put some kind of a word to identify it and then file it in the computer. And this, by the way, the process took about 2.5 years. So it wasn't something I sat down in 30 days and wrote a book. It was a long time coming. And when I wrote this chapter about my friend Mike, who was a big, burly guy. He was a HVAC guy, air conditioning expert. He had been in the Navy, and he learned his trade in the Navy, and he at one time was the head air conditioning guy for the Dallas-Fort Worth International Airport, for the whole airport complex. So he dealt with these really big machines, and a really neat guy. But he was big and burly and blue-collar and fun, and he laughed a lot, and he drank beer, and he smoked cigarettes. And he was probably 265 pounds normal weight. And he wasn't really fat. He was just a real big guy, probably 6'2 and 265, just thick. And when he died, he was about 75 pounds. And he died this, awful, awful battle with cancer that dragged out over months and months and months. But the cancer, as bad as it was and as painful as it was, wasn't the most tragic part of his death. The most tragic part of his death is that he couldn't come to grips with the mistakes that he had made in his life. And I spent a lot of time with him in his last days, and we cried together, and we prayed together, and we just spent a lot of time. He couldn't really pray because he had no faith. And again, I'm not saying you ought to have this kind of faith or that kind of faith, but he just had no plan for the certainty of death. And I hope I'm not breaking this to you, Al, but you're going to die.
When?
And every person listening, we're all going to die. The minute we're born, we're sentenced to die. But we don't spend any time thinking about that either. We don't like to think about when we die. In fact, we avoid it. And the people who avoid it the most are the ones who have the worst deaths. So having an awareness of your mistakes, having an awareness that you're going to die, if it doesn't motivate you to do anything else, I'm pretty sure it'll motivate you to clean up the garbage that you have in your conscience. If you owe somebody an apology, today's a good day. Pick up the phone, call them up, and tell them you apologize. They may hang up the phone on you. They may not accept it. But you know what? You've done your part. Cross that one off your bucket list and move on. And if you've harmed somebody, if you've taken something from somebody, whatever you've done, whatever kind of things are eating at you, because every mistake, they don't go away even if you don't get caught. They stay there with you. And they stay with you, and over time, it's just like a sliver. A mistake that you've made in the past, especially a serious mistake that hurt somebody else, that's like a sliver. And it can go really deep in there, but it's there. And it's still painful to the touch, maybe not all the time, but every once in a while, whenever you really think about it, and it's just, it needs to be lanced. You need to get it out. You need to take care of it. And my friend Mike didn't do that. He didn't take care of all the slivers, emotional slivers that he had in his body, and they just devastated him. It was so awful watching his psychological meltdown. And when I finished the chapter, sounds a lot worse than it is in the book. But when I finished the chapter, I went, okay, that's the reason. That's why. That's what this all means. So all the rest of it seemed to fit together and make sense then. And the little stories, whether it's about Mother Teresa or it's about me pinching my finger or it's about some baseball players or about Einstein. And I mean, it's all over the charts. The chapters are all completely unrelated to any of the other chapters. But they always have the same thing in common. It's somebody made a decision, something happened, and then as the reader, you get to figure it out. Like, oh, yeah. And a lot of times what people will say is, I do the same thing, or I've done the same thing, or I can really relate to that. Holy cow, I didn't realize that I have that in common with whoever it is that's, named Bill, Joe, Sally, or Mo. And that little bit of reflection is enough, I think, to get people, hopefully, to make one fewer stupid mistake.
Now, who was the biggest influences for you, first as a writer?
Oh, golly. I probably don't write like anybody else. I would say Associated Press. that would be the first one. Early in my career, I wrote the news and I delivered the news on the radio for years and years and years. And so in the old days, we would get the news off the teletype. And that's, Mia doesn't like teletypes, so we're not having any teletypes here, Mia. It'll be fine. Shh, yeah. You be quiet. Be a good girl.
I thought that was the teletype.
That was the teletype, yeah. And then you rewrite it in your own style. So I developed a style over time of writing short sentences with kind of tell them what you're going to tell them, and then tell them what you told them, which is the radio mantra, right, for writing for radio. But if there is a thoughtful writer that I really enjoy, it's Anthony DeMello. And not a real popular guy that everybody's heard of, but he wrote some really wonderful, sensitive books about people and decisions and how to behave, I guess, is a thing. So I like him. And I like William Faulkner for a different reason, but I don't write like Faulkner, and I don't think I could write fiction, certainly not at that level.
Hmm. And are there people that really give you an influence?
Everybody. I think everybody does. As you ask questions, I try to make two things happen. One, I really try to listen. What was your question? Are there people who are influential to you or give you influence? The first part. And then my mind immediately goes to, I'm wondering why Al asked that question, and I wonder what he's thinking or what he's feeling as he's asking that question. So I meet people every single day. I try to meet people every day. And as I do, I ask sometimes inappropriate personal questions, but they usually tell you when it is. But I try to get a look inside their mind and maybe even inside their soul and say, you know, where are they coming from? What are they all about? What do they want to accomplish? And how can I help them? What can I do to make their day a little bit better? So everybody is an influence. I can't think, there's no celebrity or movie star or famous person or somebody like that. I've heard some wonderful preachers in my time that I thought were really special with some of their sermons, and then other times I've listened to the same people and go, he's having an off day, he's not really good. You know, the Billy Grahams or the Joel Osteens of the world, every once in a while this is him that really resonates, and then other times you hear him and it's like, no, not so much. It's not the same. So I think everybody. My neighbor across the street was, I had a conversation with him this morning, and that was really thought-provoking. My neighbor up the hill I talked to last night, he was on his way to an AA meeting, and he shared a little bit about that. And I went, oh, yeah, you know, and it takes such will and determination to be committed as an alcoholic to going to AA meetings every week or as frequently as he has to go. I don't know if they go twice a week or once a week, but everybody.
Yeah, I sort of look for those type of people too. Not necessarily celebrity. It's just sometimes when people have been led in a direction or their life's taken them somewhere where they're doing something like you with the book and things. Sometimes there's different people they've met on the way or seen, and it kind of influenced them to go into that area.
Yeah, I think it's a cumulative effect. It
yes.
really was it grew out of a frustration with what I was observing in the world, and then these ideas started
yeah.
coming, turned into essays.
And I'm sure a lot of them are subtle, not like instant splash, like you woke up. I'm sure a lot of the things that come into your life are subtle, and you pick them up, sometimes not even realizing it.
Yep. I think it's the signs, and I think the signs, and I listen to some of your programs, some of your other programs, and, you know, you talk about a lot of really mysterious things, and there's a lot of magic in the world, and I think that if you're not open to it. And if you're not looking for it, you're not listening for it, you're going to miss it. And you miss so much because there are some really incredible things that are going on. A side note, I just flashed on it because I looked up at my hummingbird feeder. I lived at a monastery for 7 months at one period of my life, about 10 years ago. And I met these old monks that were just incredible. And each one of them had some very special life lesson. And they influenced me for sure. But one of them had this thing with hummingbirds where he was rescuing baby hummingbirds in the spring where they got trapped on a glass on a porch. And he would take them out in a snow shovel and then let them go. And, you know, and I said, do you want me to put the snow shovel away? And he said, no, I need those for the hummingbirds. And I laughed. So, oh, I've never heard of snow shovels, you know, for rescuing hummingbirds. But he told me, and I said, well, you know what? I'm going to do it with my hands. And so I started rescuing these baby hummingbirds off the glass with my hands, and I gently cup them. If you've ever seen a fly on a window, they go up and down and up and down until they're exhausted. And these little hummingbirds would do that, and they'd be sitting there, and they were just, their hearts were beating, and they were just beat. You know, they couldn't fly anymore. And so I'd pick them up, and I would whisper to them and talk to them, and then I would take them out and then just kind of throw them into the air, and they would fly away. And I did it, you know, dozens and dozens of times over the spring. And then I told him, I said, well, I'm going to train them to land on my finger. And he said, well, good luck with that. That's going to take a lot of time and a lot of patience. And then we laughed because we were at a monastery, and what do you got but time and patience? So I started hanging out by the hummingbird feeder and putting my finger up there. And sure enough, the hummingbirds would come, and at first they were, you know, they'd fly away and they'd look at me. But over time, they came, and then they would do like touch-and-go landings. They would put their feet down for just a second, and then they would, you know, fly away again. But then after a while, they realized I wasn't going to hurt them, and then they would land, and they would sometimes still, with their feet down, they'd keep their wings going, and they would feed. And then eventually, I got them just to relax. And they would sit on my finger, and they would feed at the hummingbird feeder. And then when they had their fill, then they would fly away. And it's a sort of a, I don't know if it's a metaphor for life or not, but I like to think of it that way, that if you say to somebody, I'm going to have a hummingbird sit on my finger, that just sounds crazy. You know how, that's not going to happen. But if you have a little time and a little bit of patience and you just go about it the right way and you have a good strategy and everything, you can make that happen. And I know because I did. And it was the most gratifying experience ever.
Yeah. And that's the story I wanted. Oh, great. Well, it's been an interesting hour. I'm certainly glad you had the time to come talk with us here.
I am so fortunate to have been able to spend time with you, Al, and you're a great active listener because you really do listen and you pay attention, and your questions are wonderful, and I love your program, and I'll be listening, not just for myself. I'll listen to your other guests as well.
Well, thank you very much. That's now our guest today has been the author of One Stupid Mistake, Smart Decision Making in a Crazy World. Now, that just came out September 11th, and it's on Amazon. Is it on other places, too?
It's on BarnesandNoble.com, and it's probably at some little indie bookstores here and there, but yeah. The primary source are Amazon.com and BarnesandNoble.com.
Yeah, it seems to be the places now.
Yeah.
Well, Charlie Serafin, thank you very much for being here.
Thank you, Al. Very much appreciate you and your program, and best of luck to you.
To find out more about our show, guests, or to listen to past shows from our archive, please go to www.houseofmysteryradio.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.
Tired of ads interrupting your gripping investigations? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Ads shouldn't be the scariest thing about true crime. Start listening by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/truecrimeadfree. That's amazon.com/truecrimeadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
You've been listening to the House of Mystery radio show. To find out more about our guests, hosts, or shows, go to www.houseofmystery.com.
Show's over for now.
Was it as good for you as it was for me?
Well, good night.
This has been a production of Something Weird Media.
I'll be back.